the control console with a polished black plastic surface, and his reflection glowered back at him, showing him to be a powerfully built man with thick, curly black hair. A dark patch covered his left eye, the right gleaming with a vivid cold blue. A scar ran from its corner down to his mouth, both injuries dating from his childhood. The reflection revealed that he wore a long coat trimmed with white fur, and a white silk scarf was tucked around his neck. As well as the powerful rifle, Ryan carried a trusty Sig Sauer P226, a 9mm automatic with a built-in baffle silencer that had seen better days. Balancing it on the opposite hip was a long panga with a honed 18-inch blade that ended in a needle point.
You come up with part two of the plan, Ryan?
Part two?
Part one was getting the others to make a safe jump so we didn't all get butchered in a gateway. I didn't quite catch you telling me about part two, which is where you and me also get to jump.
Fair question. Guess I never got much beyond part one.
Ryan risked a quick glance over the top of the console, but there was nothing to be seen.
Best I can come up with is that you cover me and I run for the door, throw the handle, and hope that the bastard thing drops quick enough to keep them out. How's that sound to you for part two?
Like shit, Ryan. Then again, I don't have anything better. Real chance they'll pick you off from the outside.
You smell anything? It smells like...
gasoline. Looks like part two just got obsolete. They're doing to us what we did to those bastard ants.
They're hoping to drive us out.
There was no point now in trying to close the exterior sec door. The gas could be ignited in a heartbeat.
We have to jump, now.
Keeping low, the men splashed through the gasoline that had gushed into the area, reaching the closed door of the gateway chamber.
Use the LD button.
I know.
The one thing they'd been able to learn about Matran's units was that their control panels contained small black buttons marked with the trim white letters L and D, which stood for Last Destination. It worked two ways. If you'd made a bad jump, you could press the LD control and you would be back where you were before. Or in this case, if you used the button within 30 minutes of a previous jump, then you would go to the same place. That was the theory. If Ryan and JB could make it safely and trigger the jump mechanism, then they should arrive at the same destination as the others. Ryan looked behind him. The rifle was across his shoulder and the handgun in his fist. Their movement hadn't been followed by a shower of arrows or spears, as he'd feared, which meant the natives out in the dense, sweating greenery were about to light the fire. He reached up and threw open the door, gesturing for JB to roll into the chamber. Now the natives saw that they were in danger of losing their prey. The control panel was set at chest height in the frame of the door, and Ryan lunged for it, left-handed, aiming for the LD button. Simultaneously, a burning branch was thrown into the gateway from outside, whirling in the air above the consoles. Ryan grabbed the edge of the door and started to pull its great counterbalanced weight shut to trigger the Matran's mechanism, his eye watching the torch. The jagged branch landed, a ripple of blue fire running from it across the surface of the gasoline, turning it into a sea of fire.
Dark night!
Ryan recoiled from the flaring heat that seared up at him, the hot yellow flame cut off by the closing armor glass door. The walls of the hexagonal chamber were immensely thick and powerful, but there was no way of locking or bolting the chamber to make it secure against an external attack.
Fire might keep them away.
Ryan sat quickly on the floor, avoiding the metal discs, leaning his back against the cool armor glass. He noticed in passing how all the smooth walls were smeared with patches of lichen and moss, laid there in the extreme humidity of the jungle since they'd first arrived a few days earlier. The fire was visible beyond the armor glass, the smell of smoke filtering through. But there was no sign of any of the natives daring the heat to try to get to them. JB sat opposite Ryan, the scattergun across his lap. He snatched a moment to take off the fedora and place his spectacles safely in one of his pockets. The air at the top of the chamber was already filling with tendrils of whirling gray-white mist, and the discs in floor and ceiling were glowing brightly. Ryan could feel the familiar, nauseous feeling of his brain being swirled around inside his skull, as though the bony walls were expanding and the pinkish tissue was shrinking, smaller and smaller toward infinity.
Here we go.
The darkness spread out from the depths of his own mind, swallowing all of his senses. It was a bad jump. There were times when the transfer was made with nothing worse than a sick headache and occasionally a nosebleed,
but with no sensation that every molecule and atom of your body had been dissolved and projected through space and reassembled at some distant point. Other times, the jump really messed with your head. JB found himself walking along a beach. The stones beneath his combat boots were of differing sizes, from duck egg to basketball. A thick mist drifted in from the gray sea to his right, which lapped at the edge of the beach with small, monotonous rollers, sucking at the shingle, rising and falling, advancing and withdrawing. To his left, he could just make out vast cliffs of smooth, polished granite, rising vertically, their tops out of sight in the lowering clouds. The beach stretched ahead of him for about 200 yards until it merged with the grayness. Behind him, the dreary vista was exactly the same. Despite the chill, the armorer was dressed only in a thin shirt and a torn pair of camouflage cotton pants. The air was bitterly cold and damp, and JB shivered as he walked along. The sky was completely overcast, and he had no clue which direction he was taking. The stretch of beach was completely deserted, with no seabirds wheeling above his head, no sign of life out to sea, and not even the smallest crab clicking among the stones. JB became aware that it was beginning to drizzle. Suddenly and seamlessly, he was inside the ruins of some vast building, filled with huge, rusting pieces of machinery, so archaic and corroded that it was impossible to tell what they might once have been. Water dripped from the rotting ends of the roof timbers, splashing into great, dark, weed-fronded pools that almost covered the stone floor. And he was not alone. Every time that JB took a few steps forward, he caught the sound of someone, or something, following him. But when he stopped, there was silence. And when he spun, there was nothing to be seen. The way forward led him deeper into the maw of the ancient building. His glasses were covered in condensation, but when JB tried to wipe them clean, he found that it formed a sticky film, like spilled honey. A strange, bitter smell hung in the cold air, like blood poured over molten iron. The passage ahead of JB became more narrow, the ceiling dropping lower. A rusted iron door with a massive handle blocked the passage. JB hesitated, glancing behind him. A pale sun broke through holes in the roof and walls of the passage, penetrating in spears of jagged light. Unarmed, JB had to go on. The handle wouldn't move, though he thrust at it with all of his strength. The red-orange corrosion was sharp and jagged, and blood began to flow from his palms, dripping from the ends of his fingers onto the concrete floor. JB no longer dared to turn to face what was pursuing him, in case the sight of it drove him mad. JB darted through the narrow gap and pulled the door shut behind him, slamming home a pair of well-oiled bolts. He glanced around to make sure he was safe, and found himself in a box of stone 6 feet high, 5 feet lengthwise, and 4 feet across. Solid concrete with no window, yet there was an odd, filtered phosphorescent light inside the chamber that enabled him to see a polished steel grill set in the center of the floor. The room was filled with the scent of the ocean. Water began to rise through the grill, slowly and silently, icy cold. It had a thick consistency, more like molasses than water. It was flooding inexorably into the small cube of stone. Whatever the horror waiting outside, it couldn't be worse than a hideous and lonely death by drowning. JB tried to open the bolts on the door, but they were utterly immovable. The liquid had reached above his knees. He reached down, locking his fingers in the bars of the grill, using all his strength to try to pry it open. He realized he'd have a glimmer of a chance if he could force himself down into the oily water and swim out against the advancing tide. But the grill didn't move. JB straightened, fighting against the crippling panic. He stood as tall as he could, rising on the tips of his toes, pressing his head into the angle between ceiling and wall. Rising higher, the water was to his shoulders now, then brushing his chin. JB, hanging stubbornly onto the last shreds of survival, lifted his mouth and nose into the tiny pocket of air that still remained. The liquid covered his mouth, filling his nose, as he took a long, deep breath. A long, last breath. There wasn't even a chance to scream. Ryan lay in a hammock, stretched between a pair of sturdy old oaks. Around him were all the sights and scents of the fall in New England. Beyond the bottom of the flowering garden, he could see the rolling hills, dappled with the fiery hues of